Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 129 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are actually happening, to meet the people that make that theater happen. Just a quick reminder that you can download and subscribe to the podcast from the Apple Podcast app or from iTunes. That way your feed will be automatically updated when we release an episode, but you can also listen to us on many other podcast streaming services such as Stitcher and Google Play. Please rate and review our podcast if you have a spare 30 seconds and help us reach more theater lovers out there around the globe. And speaking of the globe, this week's guest has an incredible career and is deeply entrenched in the theater world over here in London. As artistic director of Shakespeare's Globe Theatre on London's South Bank, Dominic Dromgoole oversaw 10 successive and extremely successful seasons at the Bard's Theatre. His tenure started with his directing Coriolanus with Alistair Macaulay for the Financial Times, saying, "Dromgoole does not lack nerve. He has just begun his Globe regime with Coriolanus. If Dromgoole can build from this promising start, the best years at Shakespeare's Globe lie ahead." Not bad. And the final production he directed, The Tempest, was similarly well received, with the stage saying, "Few directors can take a space and make Shakespeare feel as alive in it as Dromgoole." But he also oversaw many productions from a multitude of talented directors, which included Jeremy Herron's 26th production of Macbeth, and that was also revered, with David Lister of The Independent stating, "This is the Globe at its best." Safe to say, he had a great decade at the Globe. In his last season as well, two of his Globe productions would hit the West End with Nell Gwynn and Farinelli and the King with Mark Rylance, his predecessor as artistic director of the Globe, with that show also ending up on Broadway, picking up 5 Tony Award nominations. And now, Dominic Dromgoole is turning his hand to film directing, with his feature film debut, Making Noise Quietly, hitting the screens last week on the 19th of July, written by Robert Holman, with the script having been adapted from the acclaimed stage play of the same name and written by Holman, Nick Drake, and Mark Rosenblatt. Now, I got to sit down with Dominic and talk to him about the transition from theater to film, working with some of his favorite actors, and what he sees himself doing next. Have a listen. Okay, so we're here to talk about Making Noise Quietly.
Yeah.
Is this your first feature film kind of coming?
Yeah.
Tell me, I mean, because you're 10 years at the Globe, is that correct?
10 years at the Globe.
And you come on, and was it something that you wanted to do, Dominic? Is it?
It was a sort of natural evolution. It was something I'd always been interested in and always been fascinated by.
Yeah.
But towards the end of our time at the Globe, we were experimenting with film in a whole variety of ways. We were making documentaries. We filmed many of our productions, about 26, 27 of them. Put them out on a variety of platforms. And then we came up with this mad scheme at the end of my time at the Globe, together with many things coming to an end and many things being celebrated. Our Hamlet tour, which had been going around the world for 2 years, came home. It was Shakespeare's death, 400th anniversary. Yeah. It was a whole collection of things. So we decided to do a sort of spectacular along the South Bank. And we came up with the idea of making 37 short films, each set in the place where Shakespeare's imagination was leading him, as a sort of experiment about language and place and how they related to each other. So we had Cleopatra in front of a pyramid and inside a pyramid in Egypt. We had Jesse Buckley in Juliet's tomb in Verona, the real one. We had Don West driving around in Rome muttering as Coriolanus. We took Michelle Terry, Alex Jennings, Ashley Zangaza, and Nikesh Patel out as 4 Hamlets to Elsinore. And so it was a way of just sort of bashing language and landscape against each other and seeing whether that was a stupid thing to do or it was a fruitful thing to do, but just interesting as an experiment. Took Simon Russell Beale to Greece, and we he did Time of Athens opposite the Acropolis.
Yeah.
So that was a sort of nudge, big heavy nudge in the area of direction of film. And then when I left, I wanted to do more. And so we set up this company, and since then we've made 6 films, one of which Megan Osquartley directed, all of which I produced. And they're very much in the style that I wanted them to be, which is just about human stories and small, delicate, modest, fine human stories, and just see what sort of reach they have.
So it's, I mean, I watched the film, and I have to say the third one broke my heart, making us quietly.
It's like tough,
the,
isn't it?
It's so tough. Mm. Oh, I was just, I'd love to have seen my heart. I should have checked my heart rate, you know, on the Fitbit. Well, you know, it's really good. I mean, it feels very theatrical. It's so nice. Is it, okay, how do I frame the question? Taking a small group of people, like these are intimate conversations between 2 or 3 people, which is very theatrical. Letting them talk, letting them have space, letting them explore language. You don't often get that in a film. And so it's, you know, it's almost the, you know, the diametric opposite of a Marvel piece.
That's sort of the intention.
Yeah.
That's sort of the intention, is that the films that I love and, you know, grew up loving are films of the late 60s and early 70s and through the 70s, where what mattered was humanity and the weight of humanity and the truth of the humanity and watching people behaving and behaving through language and discovering themselves through relationships and the dynamics of those relationships. And that's always what's been of interest to me, more than being sensational or being histrionic or being extreme or playing a high style or playing a high argument. I mean, I'm up for those films and really enjoyed them.
Yeah.
But it's not what I'd want to invest myself into.
Yeah.
And I think it's really great to watch films that are about people changing. And we've subtitled it 3 Conversations, and it is about people turning together. And so through encountering someone new, you change, you grow,
and you open up. It's just strangers. Biscuits! Yes.
It's too many. It's very kind.
Thank you very much. It is like that is you know, a plate of biscuits. This, and then the great thing about this is that strangers meet. And so each time as somebody is introduced into a room, you know, Hitchcock always said, you need something, introduce a gun into a story, you know, if you need to heighten it. But I found that once you get to the second story, you realize this is another stranger. The stranger is the gun. Stranger is the catalyst that would change somebody's.
I mean, he's great at, Robert's great at dropping people from a great height into a situation. So he doesn't walk people into a situation from, you know, at a gentle pace from a distance, and you watch them sort of slowly walking towards each other, and you hear their backstories, and you sort of develop a degree of anticipation about what the encounter will be. It's like, bang! It's 2 people drop sharply from a height with that parachute, and then they're just, the only thing they've got is each other.
Yeah.
And they have to work stuff out very quickly. And I think that's very dynamic. I mean, for me, that's the most interesting dynamic in all drama, whether it's theatre or whether it's film.
Yeah.
Someone asked me earlier what my favourite film was, and I hadn't made the connection in my head, but actually one of my favourite films is 12 Angry Men.
Yeah.
And the essence of 12 Angry Men is you've got 12 people that go into a room and they sit and they talk, and in the process they all diametrically change their point of view. And I think also there's something sort of positive about that. At this moment, people are so entrenched and they're so defined and they're so stuck in their own point of view.
Yeah.
And the idea that you can very gently and kindly through the process of encountering someone else, have a bit of a sea change is rather important, I think.
I think it's quite good to where it's set as well, like both the period, like the time it's set, because there's no electronics, there's nothing, you know. Right. So the only interaction is face to face, and
it's face to face, and it's discursive, and but also I think, you know, we are often more open and more unguarded and more alive with strangers than we are with people we're very familiar with and very settled into patterns.
That's an interesting observation. Because they could hold something over us, our families or our friends.
Or we get sort of stuck in a groove and accustomed to a certain sort of way of behaviour. It's why we enjoy being in the theatre, is that you know, whenever you take on a new community and join a new community, you start again in some way.
That's great. Just on a technical, you know, level, did you find storytelling any different from, you know, from a stage to a screen? Did you find it more freeing or, you know, more constrictive with timing? I've done both. I've directed, you know, theater, and I've directed short films and stuff. I always think story is king, but you know, you come.
You always think
story is king. Yeah. Tell the story, you know. But you know, personally, did you find, you know, coming from stage with massive productions and almost as an artistic director of, you know, overseeing a season, telling stories, you know, going into film, was it any
sort of good? Well, I mean, coming from a lot of Shakespeare, which I did, in the way, this is the inverse, because with Shakespeare, you've got a sort of an excess, a glorious excess of narrative. Mm. You've got like a whole collection of runaway horses that you're trying to rein in, and this amazing digressive capacity of going, oh, I'm going to go over there and tell a big story in that direction, and now I'm going to tell this enormous story. And so it's almost like you've got too much story that you're trying... You wanted to be clear with, and you wanted to be make people care about the story, but you've just got this monster of story.
Yeah.
With this, this is quiet stories, small stories, delicate stories, and they're quite oblique. I think, to be honest, in terms of making it would be, and in terms of editing it specifically, it'd be very different according to what the nature of the material was.
Yeah.
If you had to hit a story that was really, really clear, that would dictate everything about how you edited it. If you were playing a very high style, that would dictate everything about how you edited it. You'd say with each slate, you'd say, which is the one that best hits this high style, that best achieves this? And so we'll congregate all those together. Or if you had a film that was an argument, again, you'd say, what makes this argument best?
Mm.
With this, because it's naturalism and it's life, it's very hard pick and it's very hard choice, because you're looking at lots of, and the actors turned up wonderful varieties, take after take after take, and you're looking at a lot of different forms of life and different moments of life, and so it gets very hard to make a choice. You sort of go, why am I picking that one rather than that one? And what's actually better about that than that? And you sort of fall down a wormhole a bit. Which is why I think naturalism is a very particular skill and a very difficult skill.
The actors in it, I think performances in it are phenomenal. I'm a big fan. I mean, Barbara Martin, amazing. She's wonderful. I mean, I'm a huge fan of hers.
Isn't Deborah great as well?
Deborah's great. I mean, God. I mean, you talk about naturalism, I just felt that seeped through all three pieces.
Mm-hmm.
The acting is phenomenal. I mean, I know like Lou Thompson, Barbara from theater, you know, going to see them in theater pieces, and were they all of that background? Did you know them personally from
I've worked from the with Deborah, produced at the Bush years ago. Barbara was in Henry IV.
Yeah.
Part 1 and 2. Tristan I worked with on Love's Labours. Jeff I'd never worked with. Beautiful actor though.
Yeah.
Matthew and Luke I had worked with. So, yeah, no, I knew a lot of them, but I also knew that they had a different gear and they had a different mode of expression from what I'd done with them. And when I worked with Barbara, she did a very high-spirited Mistress Quickly, rather sort of expressionist and gothic and extreme. But I'd seen her work in telly, and she's got a collection of different colours and much more sort of imploded ones. So no, it's just a treat to see their range. And it was a treat as well to cast for spirit as well as for minute sort of, are you exactly the right person for this role?
Yeah,
which
yeah.
I can find can be a bit restrictive.
Mm.
It's quite nice to say, has this actor got the right spirit for this?
Yeah.
And will that come over? And I hope that it has.
Well, I can feel the theatre, a theatre... I don't know, you're talking about the spirit of theatre in these pieces as well, like being in close proximity and being in the moment. They almost feel like, especially the second piece with Barbara, just that moment, you know, where it plays out in one take. That's what it felt like. I was watching this lovely slice of life.
Well, I don't think, you know, because people are very... can be very sour about that and very grumpy about that. About, you know, they go, oh no, you've got to make it different, you've got to open it out, and you've got to expand it and make it epic and so on. And sometimes, yes, you have to, sometimes you don't have to. I mean, you look at 12 Angry Men, you just go, 12 Angry Men is what it is, and it's perfect. Or, you know, there's a variety of other situations where something very theatrical, I mean, Casablanca always has a trace element of the play it came from. And it's one of the pleasures of it, is that you feel you're walking around something it's a bit hokey, it's a bit melodramatic, it's a bit high. It's fantastic.
It is, wordplay, it's fantastic. Mm. You just forget how quotable that film is when you watch it.
It's gorgeous.
So many amazing quotes from it. I think finally, just because I know you've had a long day, Dominic, what next? Where from here? I mean, I loved the pace and I loved the feel of this. I mean, I got totally into this, you know, and I think cinema is great. It almost felt like a cinematic presentation of theatre, of story, here are three pieces that could have come off the stage, you know, because it's so intense. It's so intense. I think the cinema needs a bit more of that. I mean, there's a real...
I think it's nice. I mean, we're trying to... We've made six, most of which are produced, but we're trying to say that the humanity is the spectacle.
Mm.
And you don't need any spectacle beyond humans being humans. And that's more valuable than explosions or intergalactic madness, and that, you know, two people, three people, four people in a room being people is fascinating in itself. I mean, we've opened that a bit. The latest film we've made is called The Man in the Hat. Kieran Hines, Stephen Delane, is silent.
Right.
It's got a lot of music in it. It's got a lot of performed music.
Yeah, Stephen Delane, fantastic performer.
Oh, he's fucking brilliant in this.
He's just on...
He's intensely good.
He's so good.
This film. And he's silent. He never says... He says one word. He says omelette. And that's the only word.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. And Kieran doesn't say a word.
He's
in 90 minutes of it.
Yeah.
So we can experiment a bit with form, and we'd love to, but I still want people and humanity to remain at the core of it.
Yeah. Well, long may that continue. Tommy, thank you so much
for
sitting down and talking to me.
Dominic Dromgoole, theater and film director, speaking about his new release, Making Noise Quietly, which you can see in a cinema near you now. Now, before I go, just a few housekeeping notes. If you're a theater professional, head on over to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free profile page. All you have to do is create an account with an email address, make up a cool password. Away you go. Start connecting with the theater industry now. You can also follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Curtain Call. And you can follow me personally at John Schwab, J-O-H-N-S-E-H-W-A-B. Now, we'd love to hear from you if you have any suggestions or feedback for the podcast. Get in touch with us via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me at john@curtaincallonline.com. It just leaves me to say a huge thank you to Dominic Dromgoole and all the guys at Open Palm and Premiere for arranging the chat. If you want to catch up with Making Noise Quietly, it's in the cinemas now, so check your local listings. And thank you for listening to the Curtain Call Theater Podcast. I will catch you all next week. Bye.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.